Great. My name is Tim Jaquette. I was asked to come down here by Art Murillo and Gary Arthur. I'll just give a quick background on myself. I've been in this business a little over 30 years. I started as a musician, and I still continue to play. In fact, I was a little bit late getting here because I was playing on a session up in town. And so those of you that still play instruments and you get interested in recording, don't give up your instrument. It just only helps you become a better engineer the more you know about music. I started 30 years ago as the original bass player in a group called The Archers way back when. And I toured with them for about 13 years on and off. And late in the 70s, I got interested in recording. And when I got into L.A., I started playing on sessions. And most of the engineers in town at that time were not musicians. They were good technical guys. They knew the electronics, and they knew all of the terminology of the recording equipment, but they didn't know the musical language or what the instruments should sound like. And it frustrated me. So a drummer that was a really close friend, one day, he and I were on a session. I was playing a simple country thing and just playing boom to the drummer's chuck, and I made a mistake in one bar. And the engineer said, okay, we can fix that. We can go back and punch in. Well, he had a beat on either side of where I made my mistake, and he couldn't punch in and fix it. So he finally messed up two or three bars, and I said, hey, I'll just play the whole thing again. I got frustrated. I went to the drummer friend of mine. I said, you know, I could be in there. I could be getting better sounds. I could be playing and punching. You know, I could be doing it all myself. What? He says, I don't hear you complaining, man. He says, go do it. If you think you're so good and you're so smart, go do it. So he challenged me. I went and bought a book called Modern Recording Techniques. Back then, it was the first printing of this book. If you can find it, it's a great book. It's Huber Runstein. And I bought that book, and I read it three or four times through. And then from then on, when I was playing on sessions, I would just absorb all the terminology that was going by, and I kept quiet and just would apply what I had read to what I saw being done. And then early 80s, I had an album I was playing on, and here again, we had an engineer who was not happening. And same drummer, so I said, you know what, I took you up on that. Watch this. So I went up to the producer and I said, you mind if I cut the last three tracks? You know, I won't charge you anything. It's just, you know, I think I can do it from the control room. It'll be easy. He goes, well, great, do it. So I did it. And he went, man, these sound better than all the other stuff we cut. He says, you want to mix the album with me? I said, sure. Got done mixing the album with him. He says, you want a job? I said, sure. So that's where I didn't go to college. I didn't go to school. I paid my dues driving into L.A. at 8 o'clock in the morning, working at a studio from 10 in the morning till 8 o'clock at night, and then go playing in a nightclub from 9 till 2:30 in the morning. I did that for 5 years. So it was nonstop bombarded by music and recording. And that's how I cut my teeth and how I learned. Since then, I've had many experiences, a lot in Christian music, a lot in the secular field. I did a lot of engineering on Paula Abdul's first album. I had a mix on that first album of hers and worked with Ellie and Babyface for about 5 years doing a lot of R&B. Got tired of that, punching one note at a time. It just wasn't music to me as a musician. So then I got interested in TV and film scoring. I was the scoring mixer on the last two seasons of The Young Riders and have done several Disney Channel movies. The movie Arlington Road, I was a scoring mixer on that movie. And a lot of the things that you hear on Nickelodeon, Amanda Show and those things, I've recorded a lot of those. So I've progressed to that point in my career. And about 10 years ago, I got asked to be an advisor for a community college. They wanted to put up a recording program at Citrus College in Glendora. So they had a concept of doing a handshake between industry and education. So they hired some industry professionals like myself to be on an advisory board and tell them how to set this studio up and put up a program. So they made them a regional center and gave them all of the state's budget for all of the community colleges to do this kind of thing. And we got $10 million and put up a beautiful facility, two Carl Yancher Wave Space rooms, one seats about 40, have a 72-frame Neve V-Series film console in one room and a digital console, a Euphonic CS2000 in another room. And we have a program that lasts a year, and the students basically come and get a technical certificate, and then we funnel them right out into the business. The studio is also used as a rental facility, so the students get to actually interact with sessions that are going on. The good thing about that is then I get asked by some churches to do live worship albums, and other Christian albums. And so these students actually get to rub shoulders with people like you. How many of you saw Art Morello this morning in his group? I've been down to his church and recorded two live albums down at his church. And so then when we go up to the studio to fix, the students that are in my program get to rub, you know, shoulders with people like Art and the guys in his band. And we hired Alex Acuna to come in and play in some percussion on his thing. So it's really been, for me, a blessing to be a musician and be a part of recording and making music. Basically, this first class is supposed to talk about recording basics. How many of you have dealt with microphones and understand what these are on a wide level? You understand the difference between dynamic and condenser microphones? Most everybody gets that. Less hands? Most of you? Okay. Okay. Well, a dynamic microphone works on an electromagnetic principle. It's a coil in between two magnets. It needs no power. Condenser microphone is a capacitor. It needs power, 48 volts, usually from your console. All right. Each microphone has its own drawbacks. This dynamic microphone will always be cardioid. Okay, it's a heart-shaped pickup pattern. All right, where a condenser can be multiple patterns, from omni all the way down to cardioid, and it'll usually have some other electronics on it, like a low-end roll-off or a pad, electronic pad, so you can get it close to loud sound sources with high sound pressure levels. So picking your mics is pretty much the start of any good recording, or actually any good sound live. Deciding what mic sounds best on what instrument or on what person's voice. Each person in your worship team probably sounds different on the same mic. If you've done sound at your church, you've probably run up against that where they all have the same mic, but each one of them sounds so different. You're having to get wacky with the EQ to make it. You might try some different mics on different people, and you'll find out that, you know, one person's voice will sound much better on an SM58 as opposed to a Beta 58. You know, if somebody has really hot sibilance, you know, some of the girls have really bright S's, and if that really bugs you, rather than rolling off the top end, hand them a regular 58 instead of a Beta 58. So picking your mic, because the microphone, truthfully, is your ears at this point. It's the start of what you want to hear, whether it's going to go to a recorded medium or whether it's going to go out through the speakers to your congregation. Any questions at this point about microphones uses, anything that you've had come up with microphones?
You know, when you're talking about the roll-off, mm-hmm.
Right.
Can you just kind of touch on that again?
Okay. There's a
I don't understand.
Okay.
On the AKG-414s, they've got all of
right.
Them. And I know.
Yeah, there's a little symbol that looks like this and another one that looks like this. Okay? What this is called is a high-pass filter. Okay? So it's going to pass high frequencies. Basically, it's going to cut low frequencies. And on the 414, it gives you two designations. It gives you 75 and 150. So depends on what you're going to record. If you're using it for a female voice, doesn't respond much below 200. And if she's standing near the bass player, why not kick in this 150? That way all that low rumble from the bass amp then is not heard by the microphone. And her voice doesn't carry down into these frequencies anyway, so you're not damaging the sound of what you're trying to pick up. All right? There are other dynamic microphones that do have low-end roll-off switches, but they don't look like this. How many of you use Sennheiser 421s, black microphones? They have a little collar, a little sleeve at the end of the microphone. And there are other microphones that have this as well, and they have designations that say this. And it doesn't mean mono and stereo. Okay? Their designation is for this. So they're building it in, saying, okay, if you want to have music, you put it in that M position, and it's full frequency. It's linear. It looks like this. There is no roll-off. And the closer you click it to this speech, the more low frequencies it rolls off. Any questions about that? Pretty simple. If you happen to have microphones, think about this use, because there are a lot of times when I've gone into churches either to play or to do sound or to record, and sure enough, on your board, 9 times out of 10, right up by the mic preamp, you have this same switch that is a high-pass filter. And I'll start playing and go, man, it sounds really thin. On my first break, I'll go back to the console, and sure enough, the engineer has this button pushed on the bass. He's rolling off all the low frequencies.
Well, I normally use the low cut just, mm-hmm. On everything, even the bass player.
Really?
On the mix board.
Now, just, do you have a selectable frequency, or is it just boom?
No, it's just a low cut filter.
Yeah, probably on the kick and the bass. I wouldn't do that.
Oh, okay.
Because you want those frequencies, especially if you have a sub in your church. How many of you actually have a sub in your church?
We've got a small area though. Mm-hmm. We've got a very small room, so I'm trying to keep the feedback. Yeah,
low frequencies aren't going to be a problem.
Still don't use that
right
cut on there?
Yeah. Most usually in a small room, the hump you're going to get is in between 2 and 500 hertz. And a lot of times, this big bump in the room is above where the bass and kick low frequencies really are.
Okay.
They're usually from 100 on down. So rather than do that on the kick and bass, I'd go up in this range here and notch out some of those frequencies, and you'd find a little bit more point and definition to the low-frequency instruments.
You said the woman's voice bottoms out at about 200?
Roughly.
What about the man's voice?
Goes down to 100-ish. Okay. So in that case, you do have a choice here. Depends on whether he's a tenor or a baritone or a bass, too. So you have to make that choice, knowing who's standing on the microphone. But then you have the choice here to use 75 if you want. Okay. And this, obviously, I don't know how many of you know this term, but this rolls off usually at either 6 or 12 dB per octave. Okay? Everybody understand that concept, pretty much? The idea is it's not going to roll off right at 75. 3 dB down from 75 is where that actually starts. And then from there to the end of the frequency spectrum, it's going to roll off 6 decibels or 12 decibels every octave from there on down. Okay? So at half of 150, at 75, if you have this clicked in, at 75, it's still going to hear 75, but it's going to be 6 or 12 dB less than what you'd normally have. It's not going to go away completely. So it's not like a brick wall. It slopes off. Okay? Other things about microphones, choir is probably the hardest thing to mic if you're in your church, and you can't get mics too close to people, obviously. So usually small capsule condensers seem to work pretty well. They cover a wide area without having a large diaphragm to have a lot of other things pulled in. And I wouldn't use a dynamic microphone necessarily because the frequency range is a little bit more limited than a condenser microphone. You want to hear a lot of that air of the person's voice, especially the women. So a condenser microphone would work best on a choir. Any questions? Okay, now that's for live. What about if you're trying to record your choir for, let's say, a worship CD in your church? Any ideas of how you're going to do that? How are they going to hear the tracks? You've already recorded your rhythm section. Now you want the choir to hear that so they can sing along. Any ideas of how you'd record the choir?
10,000 headphones.
10,000 headphones. You know, think about the leakage of 10,000 headphones. Okay? Well, that's okay. That's going to be one issue. So there's a little trick that even in the studio we like to use with a lot of voices. Now, it's a single-point stereo microphone. You can take multiple passes. Usually, this is MS. This doesn't mean mono and stereo either. Okay. For those of you that know this miking technique, this is middle and sides. And sometimes you hear guys use this as mono. But what it is, it's a cardioid and figure eight. All right? This gets summed as left and right. So you have all your choir standing around here like this. Okay? So you get a nice stereo image of your choir. All right? Now, a great technique for being able to record the choir like this is putting a monitor here and here, making sure that the two monitors are equidistant from this microphone. Okay? These distances have to be equal. All right? Can anybody see where I'm headed with this?
Cancel.
Well, only if you reverse the phase. Yeah. This speaker is this way, but then this speaker would be this way. That way, when they reach the center where the microphone is, they cancel. The only thing that's going to come back to this microphone is any reflections that might come off of the wall and hit back to the microphone or off of the ceiling. But you can usually take a lot of low frequencies out of those monitors, take a lot of the drums down. All they really need is a little bit of rhythm and some piano. And when you try this and you get it just set up just perfectly, it cancels at the microphone and it sounds like 100 headphones leaking. It's a very small amount of leakage. And then the big picture, once you add in the track, you don't hear it at all. You got a big choir sound without having to have tons of headphones and a headphone amplifier.
Okay.
I'd want to face the monitors towards each other and basically at the choir, but then I want to reverse the phase on one of them. So one is they're out of phase with each other and they cancel.
Oh, like now. They're both not.
No, you don't want if you
No, they're still in phase.
They're out of phase with each other. That's right.
Well, these guys may understand phase being the sinusoidal wave or the amplitude and so forth.
This is electronic or acoustic phase rather than just...
Okay, just make sure that...
Right. So the idea, if you don't understand what phase is, a speaker is basically a dynamic electrostatic, an electromagnetic device as well. It has a magnet and a coil. All right? So there's a positive and a negative pole. Okay? What happens is when that electric pulse hits the speaker the first time, the first impulse, if the speaker is in phase with the rest of your system, makes the speaker move out. Okay? Makes the speaker move forward. All right? Well, if another speaker is sitting over here and it's wired the opposite way, it's going to move backwards its first impulse. If they're pointing at each other, you've probably heard it with two speakers out of phase. You stand in the middle and it sounds very hollow. You lose a lot of the low frequencies because the speakers are working against each other. All right? So the idea is you want to achieve that here because you want cancellation at the microphone. Now, if they're not equidistant, then the microphone's going to hear more of one or the other of these, and you're defeating the purpose. So if you can achieve to have side fills where they're pointing directly at each other with the microphone and the choir can still hear enough, that would be, optimum to where the two speakers are facing at each other directly.
And how many mics would you use? One?
Yeah, one, because then if you start putting other mics out here, you're still defeating the purpose. That other mic's going to hear this. But this is a stereo mic, is what I'm saying.
Stereo mic, and that pickup configuration, it's not a super cardioid.
No, this is mid-side. Right. And this can be done either with a matrix. There are certain microphones that are designed to do this. Or you can do a poor man's version of this. Poor man's version of this is taking a cardioid microphone and putting it in a channel. This pen is not working anymore. Yeah. So you'd take the cardioid microphone, you put it in channel one, but then you take the figure eight microphone, this one here, and you'd put a Y cable on it with one side out of phase, or if you have a phase switch on your console. So this would be your mid mic. This would be side plus, side minus. Since this is not two microphones, it's one microphone in a figure eight pattern, then basically you're just taking and putting one in phase and one out of phase. So when you play this back, what it is, truthfully, is left equals mid plus side, right equals mid minus side. All right? So what happens if I pull out this mid microphone? What should I hear? If we're doing math here, I should hear nothing. So if this mid-microphone is not in the picture, then I want these two to cancel at 180 degrees. I want them to make the sound of nothing. All right, because it's the same microphone out of phase with itself. Now when you add this mid-microphone back in, add it back in to where it sounds right and listen in stereo, and you get a very, very wide stereo image. It's basically a 180-degree sound. And the great thing is it's mono compatible, because then when you play this signal in mono, these two cancel, so all you'll hear is this. So it's a great stereo, mono compatible stereo miking technique that you don't need any, you can do it with your console in your church. All right? Ask me about it later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just real quick, how would you physically line those mics up? Obviously, you're just talking about it in the channel side of it. How would
right.
you put them out?
If it's let's say 2 4-14s, you want to see what it looks like. I would have one like this and the other one opposite of it. So it's going to sit this way. So if you're looking top view, here's what my microphones look like. I'd have one being cardioid pattern. The other one's sitting this way, right underneath it, being in figure eight. So the two microphones would sit like this, right on top of each other. Okay? That's a great technique for recording a choir without having a lot of headphones. And then if you do double and triple passes, it sounds, you know, really huge in your recording.
How close to the choir do you
have? That's really up to you. How loud do they sing? Some choirs, you want to back it up a little bit. Some choirs, they're really timid, so you want to make sure you get the mics pretty close. And since this is a wide stereo technique, you can even have them do a horseshoe around this to give a nice wide image. Don't have them stand straight against the wall. You know, that doesn't give you as much of a stereo field, and the people out at the far edges aren't going to be heard. Of course, that might be desirable. I don't know your choir. Have your choir director place the people. He knows the strong singers and the not-so-strong singers. Any questions about this? Okay, another great microphone technique, knowing how microphone patterns work, is in your church, a lot of times, you don't have the opportunity, most likely for visual reasons and for aesthetics, to have baffling. You know, a lot of churches, they end up putting plexiglass around their drummer, and that, you know, really works if you have a real live building, and that, you know, that can be good. But then I see a lot of times, too, I'll see a guitar amp sitting here and a bass amp sitting here, and the microphones are right here, you know, out like 6-8 inches and pointing right at the amp. Well, first of all, there's a couple of different issues here. How many of you know of this rule right here? Okay, you might have some phase issues between these two microphones if you don't adhere to the 3-to-1 rule, all right? One is the distance from the microphone to the sound source. The next microphone needs to be 3 times that distance to help with phase cancellation. All right? So make sure that you are observing that with your microphones. That way you won't have any kind of phasing problems from instrument to instrument. All right? But another idea here is if this is a cardioid microphone, why not get the microphone a little bit closer and put these guys at a 90-degree angle to each other. This way, you're isolating using the off-axis rejection of the microphone. You're helping isolate those two sound sources from each other.
Well, I've read information where it talks about putting the mic as close to the speaker as possible from the center out, depending on the sound that you want.
Right. Mm-hmm. So. Well, if you want to get them close, that's great, and that's probably a good idea, but it depends on how loud the guy plays and, you know, what the microphone will take as well. If he's not playing that loud and you can get it as close as you want, that's a great thing. But still, then if the microphone's sitting like this, any residual play off of this amp is going to go into this other microphone if it's sitting straight, and if it's on this edge, if you want it to be away from the center of the speaker. If you want to be away from the center of the speaker, then yeah, place them out here, get them as far away from each other as possible. And then still try to help yourself out a little bit. You know, depending on what's on these outside edges. Right. Yeah, it helps you with the using the off-axis rejection of the microphone to help isolate sound sources. That's the point. Any questions about that?
Some people like to drape the microphone just over. Can you address that?
Well, they get a real nice sound of any reflection off of the floor. Yeah, I mean, the center of the microphone is facing down. Well, this is where the microphone's going to sound best, is right in the center of the diaphragm. Off-axis, I mean, you can even hear it right here. If I'm talking right here, I don't know if you can, they're not coming through anything. Yeah, it's only going there. But the idea is, what you're going to get is you're going to get a sort of a muffled sound because you're off-axis of the microphone. I mean, if your guitar player has a very bright amplifier and axe, that might be good. But for most things, it wouldn't be. The other thing is, having the microphone, especially a dynamic microphone, close to a sound source, what else is going to happen? Anybody?
Feedback.
No feedback. There is the right answer back there. Proximity effect. What happens with a dynamic microphone, the closer you get to it, the more low frequencies. That's why radio DJs get right on the microphone so they can sound nice and big. Because they're using proximity effect to their best advantage. Well, this actually happens then when you get this microphone straight up against an amplifier, you're going to pick up low mid frequencies. All right, same thing with drums. You're putting a microphone right on a drum. When that drummer hits the drum, where does that sound mature? Does it mature right here at the drum head? No, out away. So a lot of times it's good to get the microphones just a little bit further away Depends on the sound you're trying to get. But close miking is a really tough thing to do right, and it truthfully is not a representation of most instruments and most voices. Because if the microphone is our ears, how many of us listen to a sound like this? No, usually we're standing away from it. So a lot of times, especially in the studio, if you have a controlled environment, I mic things pretty far away rather than shoving a mic right in an instrument. I see a lot of this with brass instruments. How many of you have brass instruments in your church? Yeah. I see microphones shoved right in a trumpet bell, and they wonder why it sounds so bright and harsh. Well, truthfully, that bell's there for a reason. It radiates some of the tone and low frequencies of the horn itself. And so a lot of times, I will put a microphone out and away from the horn and let that have time to mature, rather than just hearing from the trumpet, because that's all you hear if you have a microphone right here. That's all you're going to hear is buzzing of the lips and a real bright sound, a brash sound.
Same concept on a kick drum.
Right.
Instead of putting it inside the kick drum, pull it away.
And in a live situation, that's tough too, because then you don't want to get the mic out too far and hear. But if you want more low frequencies, yeah, I like to have, if I'm looking at the side of a kick drum like this, I don't put the mic in here. I'm either halfway out to the edge, if this is the kick drum pedal right here. I'm from here on out. I don't get in past that halfway mark, because then all I hear is the little tack of that beater hitting the front head, which if you want a lot of that for certain music, certain genres, you want that. Certain live circumstances where you have a lot of acoustic guitar jangling, for you to hear the attack of that kick drum get out over those bright guitars and bright vocals, you're going to have to add a lot of EQ. And if you add a lot of EQ, what are you adding to your sound? Noise. Okay? EQ is another amplifier. It's going to add more noise to your sound. And whether it's recording or whether it's live, you really want to try to achieve the best signal-to-noise ratio. All right?
What about compressing?
Compressing? If you have enough compressors to do that, that's a great thing. I usually, in a live situation like that, will only do the kick and snare. Yeah, I won't do any of the rest of the drums.
Now, on the clamps of the mics on the top, would you rather have it off of the stand and the mics off of it?
No, there's some of the Evolution series of the Sennheisers that sound really good, and they're relatively inexpensive, and they're isolated enough. There's some of the cheaper ones that aren't isolated, and boy, you hear the ring of the drum being transferred down the microphone rather than hearing the true tone of the capsule of the microphone itself, which is another thing. If you are using stands, rule number one, make sure that none of these stands touch any of the drum hardware, okay? Because I see a lot of times, you hear this, woo. You're wondering where is that coming from? Well, every time a drummer hits a cymbal, that stand vibrates. The vibration goes down the stand, and there's usually rubber feet on the thing. But then if it's bumping right up against this mic stand, that vibration gets transferred right up the mic stand, right to the microphone. And it's usually low, mid frequencies. And if you got two or three mic stands touching different drum hardware pieces, you're going to have a horrible drum sound.
Tim, could you give us an idea of how far in front of the amp?
No rule. No rule. I don't like draping a microphone over the top. No. Usually, no, not that far either. Usually in between 4 and 6 inches. I like to be out a little bit away. Let the thing.
On what axis? Right with the driver?
No, I'd like to be away from the cone. Depends again whether it's a metal cone or a paper cone. Each amp sounds different. Each guitar player's rig sounds different. If the guy doesn't have a real bright rig, I might try to get closer to the cone if he has a metal cone in the speaker. So a lot of that's determined by you. And truthfully, then when we were talking about signal-to-noise ratio and trying to get more signal to the noise, use less EQ. If you have a chance to get a better sound by going, you know what, that guitar player, it's not bright enough, and I see where the microphone is, and I know if I got a little bit closer to that coil and I moved it over and got a little bit closer, I could make it brighter. But most guys, the first thing they'll do is reach down, turn on the EQ, and crank up top end. Well, then you got, where's that coming from in my system? Well, you got 10 EQs on, all with highs and high mids cranked up, going, well, it starts to get pretty noisy. So if you have a chance, before you touch EQ, before you use compression, before you do anything else, get that microphone in the best place possible. And I know putting your ears near drums is tough to do, but walk around the front of the kit. If a guy's playing acoustic guitar, walk around his guitar a little bit. Find out what it sounds like. Find out where it sounds best to you and how you want to use it. Get down in there and make sure you hear the instrument first. Because what you hear with your ears is what that microphone is going to hear. Don't just go, back there and throw up a bunch of microphones and expect that it's going to sound great. You might get lucky. It might. You know, and as you get more experience, you can do that. But here again, then the next week, you got a different worship leader with a different guitar altogether, and it's going to sound different. You can't put that same mic in the same place. You have to listen.
Now, how about your mic stands and your monitors? How close do you want them? Or would that be getting any ringing off of that at all? Or?
You don't want this to stand to be touching any monitors either. It's far enough away, and usually most of you, if you're your drummer, if it's about the drummer, usually he's going to be on carpet, and his monitor and his stands are going to be on a piece of carpet. So there is some isolation from the floor there.
Vocals?
Well, that's always a pain. Usually they're going to take the mic and they're going to walk around with it. Most of you probably have wireless mics by now, and you don't have to worry about stands, or most of you use stands with cables?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know. If the monitor was real loud and there was a lot of kick and snare and bass in the monitor and this stand happened to be touching, yeah, it would come right up and go right into that microphone. So stand-based monitors, like little Boss rigs and those things, those are great ideas, and they get closer. In the next workshop, I'm going to talk about a technology that, how many of you are aware of what's called hypersonic sound, parametric speaker arrays? Anybody aware of that? We'll talk a little bit about it, but it's pretty much the difference with loudspeaker technology now. It's like using a floodlight. You turn on, and boom, it fills the whole room with sound. But these new speakers, parametric arrays, this hypersonic sound, you can actually take their speaker array and point it. I can point it at you, and only this group of people will hear what's going on. You would not hear a thing. So it's like pointing a beam of sound at a person. Some of the uses they're talking about is with, you know, high sound pressure level, ultra low frequencies. They're using these as weapons because then you can point it at a person and totally disorient them. That's one use. Another use, practical use, is in the grocery store, in museums. They can point a speaker straight down at a person walking through an area if it's in front of a product or a display in a museum, and only in front of that item will you hear what's being said. You walk away or step away, you won't hear anything.
What about the bass frequencies? Aren't those like omnipresent?
Supposed to be. Yeah. But with this unit, it still just points it in a single direction. And I don't think they have the frequency response totally, you know, extremely low yet. So I don't think they have that to deal with yet.
Unless you're in Alaska, even with Art.
Yeah, well, oh boy, too much Art Bell.
Speaker, mm-hmm. We're taking the light out to run into the mix.
On a speaker, we're taking
the light out. On the bass player, I'm just taking a light out.
Oh, a DI.
Using the amp
direct.
As a monitor.
Right.
And running the light out directly into the PA. Is that better than micing the.
Well, yeah, you have one less microphone with leakage problems. That's one less microphone you have to deal with. Okay. And now, what do you do with that? Here's the front of your platform. What do you do with his amp then? That you're taking
He's pointing at himself.
Good.
So he can hear.
So those of you that don't do that, it's a great idea if you have directs, or even if you're micing the guitar player. A lot of guitar players I see will stand here with their guitar, and they'll take their amps and point them back up at themselves, so it gives you more control out in the house, and you can put your microphones right here and not have to worry about it. They'll tilt them back and face them up at themselves. If you can get your musicians to do that, especially the guitar players and bass players, and bass player, I mean, they need to feel that. So there is some volume issues with them that are attached to their performance. They need to feel that bottom. If they don't, it's no good. So a lot of times, if there's a padded drum riser or some other way, I like to get the bass amp up off the floor, too, because if you have a hollow floor in your church, that bass amp sitting on the floor is resonating that whole floor. And all of the microphone stands are getting that low frequency there.
What would you do in a situation? What would be the most cost-effective way to deal with a big open box, like a resonator, like your hot rod stage, the maintenance frequency?
Well, what's underneath that stage?
Just nothing.
Great. And there's no use for it? What would anybody want to fill it with?
Insulation.
Sand. Fill it with sand. Deaden that thing right up. Pull out a couple of boards and fill it up with sand. It's pretty cheap. Go down to Home Depot, get some. Go to the beach. I mean, if you live here, just back your truck up to the beach, shovel some sand, and hey, Pastor, you mind if I put this in the platform? Yeah, sure, deaden it right up. If that space isn't being used for storage or anything else, and there's not cable runs to disturb, then I would go ahead and fill it up with sand.
Pretty big stage.
Well, that beach out here is pretty big. There's a lot of sand there, and it's free. Yeah, well, if you have a concrete place, they've got tons of sand. You know, whatever's closest to you.
Are you talking physically full or just like an inch or two?
No, you can physically fill the thing up, and then you won't have any problems with that, you know, being a passive radiator of all the frequencies that are near it.
Be careful.
It would be a sweet spot for it's,
you're not, yeah, and make sure you don't have to move it.
It's,
well, it depends on whether there's like cloth in the front and you forgot, oh, well, yeah, that's hollow under there, but there was this cloth in front and all the sand starts leaking out.
What would you do, like, if you could isolate, did you help that problem?
Isolate?
Like a monitor, put like a foam or something and take it up off that stage?
You can do that as well. You can do that as well.
Would that work? It worked?
Sure, it would help. Every little thing like that that you can think of, there's a lot of creative ideas you can come up with that'll help. The question back there was hat. And problem here, because a lot of guys, here again, have a problem with the 3-to-1 rule, because you have a snare mic in this area, and then you have a hi-hat mic, and guys usually put it right in this area here. Well, the mics are too close together. So when the guy hits this crash cymbal, you hear, anybody heard that sound? Okay. Well, for me, I like to get the hi-hat mic out over here and point it back right about where the drummer hits with his stick. He usually hits in this area, just off of the bell or near the edge. And I like to get it over this way a little bit and pointing right by where he hits the stick. I get real good definition. It's far enough away from the snare mic where I'm not having this phasing issue. And a lot of times I'll be up, pointing down at the hi-hat like this. That way I'm isolating this microphone, taking the cymbal out of its pattern as well. Okay. Another thing that I see guys do, and I just laugh. Think about your,
huh? Another pen.
No, this is my third one. We're just having too much fun drawing. Here's your basic hi-hat, and I see guys put the microphone in this area here. What's the problem with that? Every time the thing closes, it's just like having popped peas from the singers. You know, so get it away from the edges of the hi-hat, okay?
So what about the snare when you're mic and close the snare?
Mm-hmm.
How do you try to get some of that hi-hat out of that mic?
Well, here again, if you're looking from above, usually drummers will try to block you. You can't get anything near the snare drum. Here's their toms. But a lot of times I'll bring the mic up straight up through here, and I'm in this area right here, okay? And then it a little bit takes this tom. You know, if you go over here, you're going to get a lot of hi-hat. You go over here, you're going to get a lot of that tom. So usually I try to split the uprights between the hat and that high tom. And that's the best you're going to get. Yeah, coming up from underneath. Like if this is the snare drum, I'm coming up underneath in between those two and then pointing it back down like this.
You ever
this.
Try putting something inside?
Inside the snare drum?
How would that sound develop?
Well, I don't know if it would sound like that, but the mics I have heard inside of snare drums just sound a little bit too boomy to me. I'd rather hear the attack of that stick hitting that skin. Now, in miking drums, I know this is probably the toughest thing guys have to deal with is miking drums, so if we got off on that, that's great. Usually, what I like to do is, with our drum head, you have tuning lugs here. And if you get a microphone near one of these lugs, you're going to hear a lot of that tone that's developed where the skin is tight there. So a lot of times, most of the time, try to put the microphone, if you can, right in between two of those lugs so you don't pick up preponderance, a huge amount of whatever frequency is being generated near that lug. Okay? And a lot of times you'll get a couple of different tones if the drummer doesn't have them equally tuned, but at least you'll get more of the sound of the drum. The other issue here is, do you have enough tone, or do you have enough of the sound of the attack of the stick? If they don't have enough attack of the stick, sure enough, there they go. EQ button, a lot of top. Don't do that. You can get a lot of tone by having the microphone pointing here, but then if you need more stick, just lean it down and point it more towards the center of the drum. That way you'll hear more of that sound of that stick hitting the drum.
I was in a studio one time, and the engineer was putting small pieces of cubes of foam rubber on the head of the drum as well as on the cymbal.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to, from my listening to it, to change the sound, but what was it doing?
Deadening all those vibrations, frequencies. Especially with the snare drum, a lot of times we'll use paper towel with masking tape, or some guys will just take their wallet out and throw it on the drum. Boy, it sounds great all of a sudden. Yeah, because if you've, especially if you've got a high-tuned piccolo kind of snare that rings a lot. But now most drummers have those Ritchie rings. They put those around the edges, and it dampens all of the vibration near these lugs, and it makes the drum sound a lot tighter. It depends on the sound you're going for. During the late 70s, early 80s, there was a real famous drummer in Hollywood. His name was Hal Blaine. He played on a lot of records for Carpenters and a lot of the pop acts in the late 70s, 80s. He would come in, and to get that dead sound, he'd come in with a sheet from bed, from his bed at home, and just throw it over the whole drum kit, tuck it in, and boom, play that way. And it made these really dead sounds, but they recorded well. They didn't have much tone to them at all. But it's what you'd hear. Well, what happens in the studio nowadays, guys try to get that sound, they go in there and they kick in a gate. They're doing the same thing, except you get a little bit more of the real tone of the drum. You can have as much of that as you want, depending on setting the release time on the gate.
One more thing on the drum.
Let me get his first. Try to go in order.
Would you mic him just a couple of inches away on that? Like on that?
Yes.
Just about 2 or 3 inches?
Maybe even closer.
Maybe
within an inch. Because toms, what do I want to hear a little bit more out of so I don't have to use the EQ as far as the tone?
The distance.
What kind of frequencies?
The
so what am I using by having the mic close? What am I helping myself with? Proximity effect. Because then by being close to the sound source, I'm helping boost the low frequencies. All right?
What mics do you like for
this room? I'm still an SM57 guy. I mean, I've tried some condensers and...
Do you like the Beta 57 over the
SM? I haven't used a Beta. But if it's got more top end like the 58, which it probably does, I'd probably like that. Because...
Terry doesn't like the bigger one that does sound
good. Mm-hmm.
She doesn't like the SM57 Beta.
Yeah, the Beta, but she likes a regular 57?
57 on the snare.
Yeah. I usually use a normal 57, and it sounds fine. But a lot of times for recordings, I'll put another microphone underneath the snare and try to get just the snares. And what will I do with that microphone? The two microphones will be pointing at each other, so what do I want to do with that microphone? I want to put it out of phase.
What would be the best place for an overhead so you're not getting all of
it? Well, if you have the individual toms mic'd, are you talking about having the toms mic'd as well? Because then you can put those overhead mics as close to the cymbals as you want, because you're not trying to pick up a stereo image of the kit and the toms, because each tom is individually mic'd. Now, if you're having just two overheads, you're not mic'ing the individual toms, then you're going to have to get up and away. And for me, I usually like to use a stereo mic'ing XY technique. So if the drummer's sitting right here, and his drums are here and here, he's got cymbals here, I'll do an XY over the top of his head, where one microphone's capturing this side, the other one's capturing this side.
Are you not big on the drum kit mics, the little small attachable?
No, I was saying I like the Evolution ones, the Sennheisers.
Oh, okay.
Those sound pretty good. I was surprised for the price. I mean, they cost like $200 or $300. It's next
set.
For a set.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
So that XY, you're actually coming from behind?
The stands could still be over here, reaching over, but if you've got a large enough stand to come from behind him, you could. But this would be basically in front of him, over the whole kit. Okay? Yeah, the mics would be like up here in this area while he's sitting here playing.
What do you call when the capsules are directly overhead posted? You're talking about putting the capsules out like that, right?
Well, there's a couple of different ways.
What
that's XY.
Like the capsules.
That's an XY.
Okay.
Yeah. And basically that XY technique, if the capsules are right up against each other, this would be called, if they're further away from each other, like 7 inches is a good way to, this is called a near coincidence pair. There's a lot of different stereo miking techniques that we could go crazy over, but with an XY, roughly 7 inches, I seem to have a really good luck with this. And surprisingly enough, I've had really good luck with SM81s over the top of a drum kit, feeling like I'm hearing the whole kit. They don't seem to like the cymbals, since they're a little bit closer to the cymbals than they are the toms, it doesn't seem like they accentuate the cymbals as much somehow as some of the, like if I had a pair of 414s hanging over the top. So what was your question back there in the back? Last drum question, was that yours or his? Or?
No, mine was the overhead.
Okay, good. Good.
That's using two if you don't use mic on the cymbals and stuff, correct?
Right. But then if I had mics on all the toms, I'm not trying to capture a stereo image. Usually I can place a couple of condensers out here near the cymbals, unless the guy has a little splash. Some guys get tricky and silly, and they put little splash cymbals in the middle of their toms and let that one fall where it may. You don't need to have a mic near that thing. Everybody will hear it. And then your choice is, too, with these condenser microphones out here at the edge, you can have them in cardioid facing down towards the cymbals. But a lot of guys, depending on what's around the drummer, if he's, you know, bubble wrapped in, you know, his Mylar shield there or whatever that you guys put around him, then go ahead and open them up Omni. They would sound much better.
So you don't recommend putting a stage on a hollow stage?
A riser?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, if you're going to put him on a riser, that's probably okay. But, yeah, a hollow stage, if he's sitting around the stage and all the other microphones are sitting in the same place he is and all that vibration from his kit is transferring all over the whole stage and going up the mic stands, it'd probably be, try to find a way to isolate that. One of the ways was him saying, well, if you got carpet, that's going to help a little bit. You might want to put the drummer even on a smaller piece of carpet, you know, up on a riser, a small riser, even if it's just like another block of wood, a way to float a floor. You could put a floating floor for him. If you know how big his area is, go down to Home Depot and get a sheet of neoprene, put it on the floor, put a piece of plywood over the top of that, and if you want another sheet of neoprene and then carpet, great. You've isolated then him from that hollow stage. And that's a poor man's way of floating the floor. So when you're there, even if it's just Sunday morning service or the rehearsal, always do your best to get sounds quickly. Realize that, it's not about you. It's about getting good sounds. It's about what the congregation hears. You can do that on the fly. Don't slow down the process of the band rehearsing. Or if you're trying to get a recording, don't slow down that process either. Go as fast as you can. Do as much as you can on the fly. Think things ahead before you get there. Visualization is a very important skill to use in doing live sound or recording. Know what you're going to do before you get there. Have the instruments already in your mind, where they're going to be. Have the mics already in your mind, where they're going to be. And if you run up against a situation that's a roadblock, you look at it real quick, make a quick decision. Don't say, give me a minute, the snare doesn't sound quite right, and then you take 15 minutes to get a snare drum sound. Don't do that to them. You know, it's do that on your own time.
Do you do the monitors first in the house, or people have different doing a sound check? Probably do both those or the monitors in the house?
I'd probably think about the house first. You know, but I want to have that mostly done in my head and already lined up on the board and then mix from there. But as far as getting the monitors, yeah, I want to get their mix to them as quickly and first, because then they can go on rehearsing while you're still tweaking the house.
Where do you start? Your foundation build up the drums? Where do you start
with? It really, live recording, it depends what day it is, and it depends on the genre of music. I mean, I'm doing a country record right now. I start with the guitars. For country music, I want to know those acoustic guitars sound great. I just mixed a couple albums for Dennis Agajanian last week. Same kind of thing. I started with the guitars because that's his instrument. I want to know what that sounds like, and then I build everything else around that. I don't go down and start with the kick drum. His music's not about the kick drum. Yeah, if a kick drum sounds good and it's in the right place, it's going to help. But it's not about the kick drum. I mean, I went to see John Mellencamp at Staples last Friday night. The kick drum was so loud. It's like every live sound guy, every concert I go to, it's all about the kick drum. What is that? Where did that happen? I mean, I guess they all went deaf.
Everybody wants a little rap with their music.
Oh, man. I mean, you could hear kick drum and vocals, and every once in a while a little bit of guitar. You never heard one note of bass all night long. It was just eaten up in this all-enveloping kick drum, you know. And the kick drum sounded good, don't get me wrong, but that's all you could hear. This the only concert I've heard in the last probably 3 years that had a good mix. I heard Lenny Kravitz at the Joint up in Vegas, and great mix. I mean, it was all loud. It was all in your face, but you heard everything. I mean, that was a good mix. The Eagles at Staples Center, great mix. I heard everything. But right before him, Jackson Brown, you couldn't hear a word Jackson Brown said, and the snare and the kick were the loudest thing in the mix. Who cares? You know, it's not about that. Unless, of course, you know, you're R&B. If you know the genre and the drums are the most important thing, that's what drives the music, yeah, then you should start there.
Were they got two different sound engineers?
Yep.
Yeah,
usually each act carries their own front of house guy.
It's kind of a regional thing, though, too, isn't it? In the West Coast. Sound people listening, people who mix live are listening to the top or the bottom end.
Yeah, I don't go to New York to listen to concerts, so I don't.